Tesov, yeah. Thursday, the 25th of April, Rabbi Yaakov Rabin, Truth and Falsehood, Theory and Practice.
Good morning, Rabbi Isai. We just read in last week's Torah portion, we read one of the two places where the Torah warns us not to lie. We find there in Perek Yutes, Pasuk Yud Aleph, it says, Lo Sechachshu, which means don't falsely deny what you owe someone else when it regards financial dealings with others. But we also find another pasuk in the Torah by Shmais, Chaf Gimel Pasuk Zayin, which uses a very different kind of a language. There it says, Midvar Sheker Tirchok, which means from a word, from a matter of falsehood, you should distance yourself. So the question obviously, of course, is why do we need to have two psukim when everything could have simply been learned out from the pasuk I just mentioned, Midvar Sheker Tirchak, from a matter of falsehood, you should distance yourself. And why should there be a thought when it comes to financial matters that you wouldn't be over on an issur? So why is there a need for a second? So the obvious answer, of course, is that when it comes to financial matters, harming someone financially, so here, besides obviously having one aveira of sheker, the Torah throws on, besides the mitzvah saseh, which itself is a shaila, why a mitzvah saseh, tirchak, distance yourself, the Torah gives an additional lav. But there's something else which also applies, and that is when it comes to matters where a person is merely speaking what we would call an untruth, something which is not truthful, it doesn't basically coincide with reality. So here we find that the Torah tells us there are instances when, if it's not going to be permitted any other way, one might actually not only be allowed to lie, but it could also be in fact a mitzvah to lie, as we'll discuss. A guzma? That's coming up at the end. We're going to discuss that. Good. So a classic case, just that you all might recall. What do you say when a young lady is marrying a new chassan, and maybe we'll just take a second, describe the young lady. She has the personality, the midas of a prison guard from Scotland Yard in the 18th century. And she also has the body to match as well. So how do we describe her to her new chassan? What do we say about her? So that's the Gemara's Kasha in Masechet Ksuvos, Daf Yud Zayin. Ketzad Merakdim, Beis Hillel says, Lifnei Akala. Kala no of the chasuda. You say she's a beautiful young lady. Mamash at tzadekis. She knows how to whip. Mamash at tzadekis. And Beis Shammai screamed, Sheker! Midvar Sheker Tirchok. How could you say it? The Gemara comes out that Beis Hillel, as we know, we pass him like Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel tells us no. That the emes, in this case, it's indeed mutter. We find this is the emes, as we'll explain a little bit later, Bezras Hashem. So to sum up, we find there are two types of lies. One of them is a lie which contains an element of financial harm to someone else. And then there are those which don't have that. Just what we would call an untruth. But Rabbeinu Yoinah, when he's discussing the arba kites that are ein mekablin pnei hashchina, there he discusses the kat hashakranim, and he brings down, to explain the Gemara in Saita on Daf Mem Beis, he basically unpacks, if you will, the whole parsha of Sheker into nine categories, from worst to less worse. And basically, there we're going to see that there are amazingly a lot of instances which a person, if he's not careful, he could easily, chas v'shalom, be over Torah prohibitions. Today my goal is to describe and go through with some vivid day-to-day examples these nine levels, and Bezras Hashem also to come out and discuss some of the various heterim and times when it's actually a mitzvah to say sheker. So the first level, let me give you, if I may, Shimon's version of the story. Shimon says as follows. My friend Reuven wanted to take his wife on a holiday, and he approached me, a friend, to borrow money because he didn't have money till the end of the month, that I should lend him some money till he gets his paycheck. I happily lent him, I trusted him as my friend, and I lent him the money. Weeks pass by, explained Shimon, and Reuven seems to be intentionally avoiding me, to the point where I couldn't resist, and I went over and I asked him to kindly repay me. To which he replied, "Who? Me? I never borrowed money from you." And he said, "You must be confused." I turned around to him and I said, "You must be on drugs if you're forgetting." So now, Rabbi Yisai, you're the dayan. What do you say the halacha is in such an instance? So if we look in the Torah, according to the strict Torah law, we find that the Torah explains that a person would never be so brazen-faced to look somebody who had done him a teiva, who had lent him money, to look him in the eyes and to deny everything. That's what we call in halacha a kefir bakoil, and that's 100% denial. And of course, we all remember from yeshiva days that this person is exempt from making a shavua. He does not have to take a vow to prove he's correct. Only a person who partially agrees, a maida b'miksus, as it's known, this is a person who has to take a shavua. But if it's found that the person who denied everything was indeed lying, even though the Torah may have given him on the face, on the surface, credibility, if he had lied, this is the worst possible lie that a person can do. This is what we call number one in the charts by Rabbeinu Yonah. And we should know that this is the case which the Torah obviously condemns the most, and that it couldn't be any worse. Stam is a tangent. It might be kedai to realize that even already 2,000 years ago, this halacha has changed. For all those of you who might recall, that if a person comes along and says, La Adam, that's not Arabic, by the way. La Adam means, Loi hoyu devar miyolim. He denies everything. Nonetheless, the rabbis realized that when a person might have indeed, yes, been obligated, let's say he borrowed 100 and paid back 50, but now if he goes and he says, I paid you 50, so instead of having to take a shavua, which many people would avoid, it just pays to say, I don't owe you anything. So people were already starting to take advantage of that, the Gemara says, and therefore the Rabbonim instituted what's known as a shavuos hesis, a shavua which is placed upon a person by the Rabbonim to try to discourage him from making such a lie. So so much for Seder Nezikin. Let's get back to our parsha. Now we're going to go into Darga number 2. Imagine the wealthiest guy from New York. He decides to send his teenage son to go learn in the Gateshead Yeshiva. And of course, his father stuffed his wallet, filled with good credit cards, the lowest of them being a platinum prestige card. And one local Gateshead Yid decides to invite him over for Shabbos. Even more, come for the weekend. So while the bachur is taking a shower on Friday afternoon, his gracious host enters into his room and opens the coveted wallet and quickly jots down those credit card details in order to perform an identification theft. Yes, believe it. I'm not telling you which row. Okay. Now we all agree the guy is a thief. He's a thief, no question. He's a real FFB. What? FFB? How could he do such a thing? Well, you know what FFB stands for, right? A full-fledged bum. Right. Okay. So such a person like that, you don't want to make a shidduch, for sure. But the question now, Rabbi Yisai, is, has he transgressed and also done an aveira of lying? So to this, Rabbeinu Yonah explains that even though his friendly invitation to this bachur had no direct financial damage to the victim, but nonetheless the invitation and the friendship were all based on a false pretense. In other words, a false premise to bring about the conspiracy that will indeed, yes, cause financial damage to someone else. So since this is only an indirect financial damage, it doesn't go into category number 1, but rather category number 2. And therefore, such a person would be over and transgress 2 Torah prohibitions, lo sechashishu, which is the denial we had mentioned, as well as, of course, midvar sheker tirchak. Now we move on to case number 3. Moshe and Shmuel are 2 young men who are both top candidates for a job as a camp counselor in New York. And they are looking for the job, and Shmuel has the good fortune of seeing the head of the camp bumping into him at the supermarket. And he happens to say to him as follows, "If you're thinking of hiring Moshe for the job, You better make sure that you have a lot of air freshener around in the bunks. Air freshener, you know, B.O. Problem of body odor a bit. Yeah. Okay, not very nice. Yeah, but guess what? Shmuel got the job instead. Now, besides Meitzei Shemra, obviously, which itself is an Aveira on the poor, clean Moshe that was talked about, the question here is how many truth, falsehood type of Aveiras would you say Shmuel has transgressed? So here we are introduced to the third category of Rabbeinu Yonah's hierarchy of lies, and this is the last of the three cardinal sins of lying. Namely, we find here a big chiddush. Not only has Shmuel, of course, been over on Midvar Sheker Tirchak, but in addition, he also has been over on Loisechachashu, which means causing financial damage, even through preventing a benefit. There's two ways you can harm somebody. You can actually take something from him, and you could prevent him from being hired for a position. So this is the chiddush of Rabbeinu Yonah, that this too is called a financial damage, a loss, and therefore somebody who would do this would have been over to a vase.
Did they actually have B.O.?
Big one? Oh, I was in a different camp. Okay. Well, that's a shy lizard, Lashon Hora, or Moti Shemra. That's what it boils down to. But we're focusing on the truth-falsehood aspect of things. Yeah. Now we come to Dargah number 4. Miriam heard her friend Rachel saying that she's going on a diet to lose 20 pound. And Miriam goes ahead, and she tells a third common friend that Rachel wants to lose 15 pounds. Why did she do that? She heard 20, but she said 15. Why did she do it? Here, we come across something very bizarre. There is such a thing in the world that a person has just stam a yetzer hara to say lies, to say untruths. And because of a love for lying, she has become habituated to simply say lies, even though there's absolutely no personal benefit. So here, this is an introduction to a new kind of an aveira of lying, which is exclusively just midvar sheker tirchak. But this is category number 4, which is the worst of these types of aveiras. And Rabbeinu Yonah actually is marich in Shari Tshuva there, and he writes that in one way, even though of course it's less chomor, that there's no financial damage to anybody, nonetheless, there's something very serious about this. If the person were to have some kind of a financial benefit or something, it would be a little conceivable what's motivating them to lie. But just to lie for the sake of lying only, to be dovuk is his lashon, to sheker, this is very, very severe indeed, and therefore that's why it's in category number 4. He's clinging to falsehood. Category number 5. Abigail is a young mother who has yet to discover that taking her 3-year-old boy to a government office is not advisable. And what happens? So her son, who happens to be a bit hyperactive, let's say, he's bored and looking for fun. So he starts climbing up the windows to see, to make faces at the clerks behind the windows. And then he decides to sing his favorite Shabbos Semiras, nice and loud, like Tati always tells him to do. And, of course, when he starts to get very bored, so he continuously kvetches and whines out loud to his mother, whose frazzled nerves are about to short circuit. So, out of desperation, she whispers in the boy's ears and says, "Johnny, if you remain quiet until we leave here, I'll buy you a new Game Boy." So within seconds, Johnny has been transformed into a lifeless ceramic doll with his hands crossed over his chest. Yes, he passed the test, and he did it. But to his surprise, his mother, upon going home, tries to convince him that it's sufficient to receive a biscuit instead. Because after all, most of the time, he was noisy. Now, poor Johnny did not know, unfortunately, that Mom doesn't have extra money to buy Game Boys for him. And all she wanted was him just to shut up. But the question is, was Abigail wrong? After all, she had no choice. What a chilul Hashem it would have been if this little yid with a kippah on his head, a yarmulke, had not kept quiet. So this is the fifth level of lying. This is what Rabbeinu Yonah calls piv v'libay einan shovim. His mouth is saying one thing, but his heart is something else. This is category number five, everybody say. Now, category number six, I'm going to ask you a very tricky question. Imagine a yid gets all excited about a certain cause, let's say feeding starving families in Ethiopia, or monkeys, or whatever you want, and he makes a pledge to give a nice portion of his income to help that charity. That evening, after going to a shir, he rethinks things and decides that it's more appropriate to give charity to help needy families in Eretz Yisrael. But here he promised. He promised to give money to help one genuine humanitarian cause. But now in terms of priorities, he's had a change of heart. So here the question, Rabbi Isai, is what should he do, what could he do? Now, of course, obviously, Mitzad having taken on to give that charity, maybe you could say it was a toes, maybe you could say maybe it could be Matar and Neder, Nidreit Tzedakah. This is perhaps an Eitzah, a practical Eitzah. But from the world of Sheker, there's an interesting thing. We find here that if a person promises to do something and changes his mind, the Torah warns us that a person should not be what's called mechusar amana, a person who is lacking what we would call credibility or believability. He is not to be trusted. And this is a level of sheker, which unfortunately is very, very common, Rabbi Isai. People very often like to get a fundraiser, a pesty fundraiser off their backs. So what do they say? They say, give me an envelope and I'll send something in. Now, besides the theft of the envelope, the stamp, and all the attached collection paraphernalia that might be enclosed, he's simply lying and transgressing a mitzvah d'oraisa, which is something which is very, very chamor. Simply, instead of finding the courage to bravely say, sorry, I can't help this time, or finding a way out, just avoiding saying, I'll give, I'll see what I can do. That, we'll have to think about that one. Now we come to darga number seven. Guess what? There's a new yeshiva student in Gateshead. Guess who it is? It's that guy, the son of the richest guy from New York, who you all remember, who had his identity theft done a few minutes ago. So he's back. And Lemaisa, here there are two yidden in the back of the shul talking, and one of them says, oh, you know that fellow? I'm having him over for Shabbos today. So fine, his friend hears that he's invited out for Shabbos, but what does he do? He walks over to the bacher, gives him a big shalom aleichem, welcome to Gateshead. A new bacher, nice to see you. Maybe you'll be my guest for Shabbos. Please honor us and come for a Shabbos. Knowing that the bacher is already invited out. So now, what if you will, his intention was simply to extend a nice warm invitation and make the bacher feel good. Imagine that was his kavanah. But there are people who perhaps have other kavanahs. Maybe he wanted to make this young bacher feel something in his heart. Always remember that nice, warm invitation, and perhaps one day reciprocate and hook up his father with him for a good business connection. So what do you say? Has the inviter transgressed any prohibition here? So here, this in and of itself could be a whole schmooze by itself, a whole lecture. This, lemaisa, is what the Chazal referred to as Ginevus Das. Ginevus Das means that you have stolen his mind. Meaning, in his mind, this bacher believes and feels that he is now indebted to somebody else who in reality did nothing for him and actually wasn't even prepared to do anything for him, knowing that the person does not need that chesed. So here we find, lemaisa, the seventh level of falsehood. Moving on to level number eight. A fundraiser for Shari Tzedek comes to Venezuela to raise needed funds for Shari Tzedek Hospital. And lemaisa, they call a parlor meeting at the home of Mr. Chaim Rodriguez, a known philanthropist in Venezuela, and at the gathering, pledges are slow to come. So what does Chaim do? He gets up and he says, this is the best hospital in the world. Sorry, I don't have a Spanish accent. And he says, you know, just last year I gave $250,000 of support. When in reality he only gave $25,000 of support. And then suddenly, oh, a string of five-digit donations start rolling in. It was successful. We see it was successful indeed. But the question is, did Chaim do anything wrong by doing this? The answer is, sadly to say, yes. Because the eighth level of lying, Rabbeinu Yonah says, is when a person accepts praise for something which is not owing to him. Something which he doesn't actually deserve. A person is not allowed to paint a false picture and benefit from praise, whether it's for financial accomplishments, or as well, spiritual. A person who's being called a Talmud Chacham, and he knows he really isn't a Talmud Chacham, should say, I'm not a Talmud Chacham necessarily like you think. Might be lying for a Masechta. We know Chazal did give a heter to lie about modesty. But nonetheless, if you don't match the bill, you can't remain silent and take that praise. And now finally, the last category, number 9. Bensi, a teenage boy who is lacking self-confidence to speak with his classmates. He never seems to have anything of interest but to share with anybody. He was zeicha to witness a car accident. This is exciting. A rover, while trying to park into a tight spot, happened to scratch a jaguar. Not the animal, I mean the car. And the two parties got out of their cars and calmly exchanged insurance information and continued their day. But that's not very spicy. That's not so interesting, is it? So what did Bensi do? Bensi was excited. He has something exciting to share with the classmates. And what does Bensi do? He decides to upgrade the Jaguar into a Bentley. And at the same time, instead of calmly exchanging insurance information, the owner of the Bentley was said to have jumped out of the car screaming. So, needless to say, Bensi obviously was very well liked and very self-confident in school that day. The question is, was Bensi equally liked in Shemayim as well? Now here, of course, this is obviously a case where he surely didn't cause any financial loss to anybody. Nobody was harmed by his words, naturally. He merely embellished the story. So here too, even though there's no loss, nonetheless, this is a case of lying just to make a story sound better, and it unfortunately for Bensi is an Aveira, because it counts as the ninth level of lying, falsehood. And of course, we should understand this is to be distinguished between the fourth category, the first category where there's only a prohibition of Midvar Sheker Tirchak, because there, a person has a much worse Aveira because he is attached to Sheker. It's become habituated by him. He has absolutely no personal benefit. Bensi, in this case, has a wonderful benefit. Namely, he's become Mr. Popularity in school. And therefore we see the distinction. Rabbeinu Yonah writes about this, that this is warned to us by the Navi Yirmiyahu in Perek Tes, Pasuk Dalet. Limdu l'shoinam l'shaker. People for benefits teach themselves, they become habituated, they lie to gain some kind of a benefit. And of course, when this happens, that people lie a little bit here and there for personal benefit, with children, for convenience, this is very severe because it teaches the child that the word of a person is not sacred, something that need not be honored. Now, we come to the part of the shiur which most people are waiting to hear. Is it all right to ever tell a little white lie, we might say? So the key word to this answer, as it is explained by the Meforshim, is that what it boils down to is mipnei hasholom. Because of shalom, you're allowed to lie. Now, when I grew up as a kid, I was taught that shalom means hello, goodbye, and peace, which is not so bad. But as I got older, I realized that the word Sholem is actually coming from the root letters Shin Lamed Mem, which means the same Lashon of Shlemus, completion. What really is Sholem? Sholem means, as I heard from my Rebbe Rav Noach Orlowick, Sholem means that all the parts fit together completely. People's feelings are taken into consideration. Obviously, financial matters, bein olam l'chaveiroi, bein olam l'makim, everything fits together. But of course, who can determine, naturally, if the pieces fit together, if everything is complete? If you ask four mortals, four human beings, you'll get five opinions, what's called Sholem. So only HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of course, can tell us that the pieces fit together. And I think we could reflect for a moment, just go back for a second to think to the Gemara in Ksuvos, where we see that's exactly what Beis Hillel was teaching us. When a person says about a homely girl with bad midah, she's a kala, noah, of a chasuda, we see there that sheker and emes are not what we might have been taught growing up in Western society. Sheker and emes is not just, do we have facts which can be empirically proven? That's not so. That might be what we call reality. You might find some other word for that. What really is the definition of emes is, what is the rotzen of Hashem? If the rotzen of Hashem is performed, then the emes, pardon the pun, then what we find is, this is the truth, and this is really what a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants. Another classic example of this is when a person purchases something which is not a very good purchase. Let's say a person were to go and buy a mobile phone, and he comes and brags to you and says, I got this great new mobile phone for 15% less than the manufacturer's suggested retail. He thinks he got a mitzvah. But the truth is, everybody knows that nobody really relates to the manufacturer's suggested retail price. Maybe in a boutique you pay that. But most people get it for 50% off or something like that. So what do you tell your friend? If he's the type of person who'll go back, let him know. But if he's a shy, a meek person who'll never go and exchange the item, or it was a closing sale and there's no way. So you obviously have to tell your friend something to make him feel good. Now, here we have to realize that lying happens to have, of course, even though there might be a heter, and we call it the emes, the one who gave the heter, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, gave also instructions with it. And we should know and take note that when one lies, he has to be careful of three important things. First of all, the heter is only in the case where there's no other way out of it. If you can change the subject, invite the person out for supper, something like that, and avoid the lie, you should do it. Second thing is, if you can get away without uttering words of untruth, that's preferable. Your friend bought that mobile phone. Don't tell him, what a great price you paid. What a great deal. Say, wow, what a great phone. What a beautiful phone. That's so good. I'm so happy for you. Because we all know, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik said that even though it's usur for a person to lie, but only a fool tells all the truth all the time. And finally, we have to be very careful to know that you're allowed to lie in instances of Sholem, as we mentioned, provided that nobody else is being damaged by your lie, if anybody's being hurt. If you are the one who came into the kitchen and cut into that delicious cake which your wife just baked for her friend's birthday party, and your wife's on a rampage, so when she comes to you and asks you, did you eat the cake? So you might be afraid to be seen alive. So what do you say? Me? Ate the cake? Who ate that cake? But the problem here is that you're sending your wife to the next victim, one of your children who might be unjustly scolded at, and in such a case, it would not be allowed. Small things. One, somebody had mentioned exaggeration, just to close off. Exaggeration, when it's clear that the exaggeration is obviously not shayach. For example, what a kiddush last week. They had 10,000 types of whiskeys there. Obviously, it'd be hard to fit 10,000 bottles of whiskey into that living room. And also, one small thing, Chazal give as well a heter to lie to save yourself from a theft, to save yourself from being stolen, taken advantage of. A person, for example, who's going out to work for the day and sees people who don't look very scrupulous passing by on the road could say to his wife, "Be back in a few minutes." That might be 2,000 or 5,000 minutes he's coming back. But say, "I'll be back in a few minutes," so they know that you're not out for the whole day, and that's a good target for a home to possibly steal from. We should be zeicher through the chizuk of Rabbeinu Yonah's words to be careful in this very severe Torah prohibition, which often can lead to two. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu strengthen us, and we be zeicher to imbibe that midah of emes, which is the midah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Thank you so much, Rabbi Sam. Thank you.